Good morning.
Good morning.
What is our purpose in studying a spiritual message? I mean, what is the grand purpose while we are all here? And in contemplating this, it really is to live under spiritual law, because we've been given examples throughout history that if we live in this consciousness of God, if we live not as separate individual concepts of life, but as an activity of the universal one, our life is harmonious, it is peaceful, it is joyous. And this is what mankind strives for. We, even on the human level, mankind is constantly looking for ways to live in joy, to live in peace, and to live a life that is fulfilled. And pursuing that from an individual basis will take us only so far, because without the awareness of God, without the awareness of this presence of God, we are stuck in a world that is filled with contradiction, a world of duality. When we realize that God is the only substance, God is the only cause, God is the only activity, we begin to shift our allegiance, you might say. We align ourselves differently than when we are striving as human beings to find peace, to find satisfaction, to find fulfillment. In the beginning of the book of God, the Substance of All Form, the whole early part is redefining our concept of God, redefining what God is, bringing into consciousness, trying to shift the perspective of individuals away from the idea that God is an entity separate and apart from mankind, which is what most of the world believes. The world cannot accept that there is only one. And in doing this, we discover that there is no God in the human concept of life. There is no God in this world. And the more we try to bring God into this world, the more frustrated we get, the more we feel like a failure, the more we see that all of our prayers go unanswered. And why is that? Because we are pursuing something that doesn't exist. The only way that God exists in our experience is through the individual realization of that spiritual presence. So we have to look at our conditioning, at what we hold to be true, and find if we are holding this idea that there is a God somewhere out there that will do something for us. That really is our primary step in pursuing this goal of experiencing all of the benefits of spirit, realizing that there is nothing that we can do humanly to bring about the harmony and the peace and the fulfillment that is synonymous with an activity of God. Now that seems pretty rough. I mean, we are abandoning really most of our conditioning. You know, there was that great sign back in the Middle Ages when sailors were setting off toward whatever they were going to find across an ocean. Then as they were leaving port, there was always a sign that said, "Beware, you are abandoning what you know. Out there are dragons. Out there is the unknown. You might not return." Those that had the courage to do it found new worlds. Same with us. If we have the courage to abandon what is known through our conditioning, we will find that there is a new world. And that new world has always existed. It is here and now. So what is the nature of God? What, now, we can't really define God. If we can define God, we are making a concept. But we do have principles that indicate the nature of God, how God functions, what we need to know, because this is knowing the law, learning the law, what we need to know if we are going to experience this presence of God. And what the first thing that we learn mystically is that there is only one. I said last night, that's the foundation of mystical living. There is not God and a creation. There is not God and man. There is not God and the universe. There is not God and life. There is only one. And that one appears as all of these activities, as all of creation. And that appearance as creation is spiritual. It is not material. So we come to the first part of God being the substance of all form, and how do we reconcile that with life as we know it? Well, it's spiritual. Creation is spiritual. What we are seeing as material is a concept of creation, and it is not the reality. When we find this and have this experience, this realization of God in the stillness, in silence, we are entering that realm of spirit. And then we find that we start perceiving creation as spiritual, which means that if there's only one, there isn't anything destructive in creation in this world. There isn't anything harmful. There isn't hatred. There isn't conflict. But we have to perceive this. Now, in meditating earlier, how do we do this? It came to me, well, when we have friends, how do we identify our friends? The most gross level, you might say, the basic level, is by appearances. You know, she's got blonde hair, or he's got dark skin. But that really doesn't define an individual, a person. There's been so many movies where people inhabit someone else's body, science fiction movies. And how do the people discern then their loved ones and their friends when the appearance is the same? They do it through their feeling, what they know about that person. What is more important about your friends or a person, their appearance or who they are? Their consciousness, their love, their spirit, their soul. When you mask, then that you can't mask. So in those science fiction movies, it's always somebody in the family saying, that's not mom. You know, it looks like her, but that's not mom, because mom has a different soul. What is it they're picking up? They're picking up the soul. They're picking up this spiritual nature. Now that is where we begin how to dissolve this material illusion or this material concept of life. Our friends, our family, our loved ones have nothing to do with physicality. Their beingness is spiritual, and we see that spiritual being, or we perceive that spiritual being through our spiritual faculties. Now, someone asked a question here on the table. Are consciousness and soul the same? Well, there is only one. There's only one soul and there's only one consciousness. Joel has taught that God is the soul of man. So there is not God and man. There is only God appearing. So you can say that they're pretty much the same. But I would put this little twist, is that to me, consciousness is universal. Not that the soul isn't. But soul really is a term that I would use to the individual nature of God in manifestation. God manifests through your soul as individual being. Now, this is not having to do with your physical appearance. This is who you are. And who you are, as we were mentioning last night, your talents, your gifts, all of those come through a soul quality. They're not tangible in the material sense. They're ethereal. They're esoteric. They come through your beingness, and then you use them. You bring them into action by your paying attention to them, by honoring them, by recognizing them, realizing them. Consciousness is universal. When I think of consciousness, I think of that which I am, which is also the activity, the source, the substance of the whole universe. Now, I had an experience. I've told this in classes before. But to me, what consciousness is this. In the middle of the ocean, on a yacht, I was troubled. There wasn't a lot of harmony at this particular time on this boat. And for me to release myself from anger and frustration and all of that that goes with your mental activity of thinking that there's two, of thinking that there is something to be in conflict with. I was standing at night on the railing of this boat, and it was extremely calm, and I was looking into the ocean, and I could see the stars reflected in the sea. And when I started contemplating that, suddenly my whole sense of beingness went out from a limited sense of body, of emotion, of feeling, into this realization that that which I am observing is within me. That ocean is within me. Those stars that are reflecting in the ocean are within me. It is not out there. It is within me. And as that started to dawn and that realization came, I looked up into the sky and saw there are all the stars. Those stars aren't in the ocean where they appeared to be when I was looking at the sea. They're in the heavens, but they're also in me because I am observing. I am being that impartial observer of truth. And the truth is that creation itself and all of its manifestation is in consciousness. If I am aware, if I am conscious, then I am inseparable from all that is consciousness. So what does that mean? What does that do to your perspective? Suddenly you're not looking at your immediate environment through the fog of emotion, or through the fog of judgment, or through the fog of material concept. Suddenly you're looking at your particular environment in the context of infinity. And what does that do then to any sense of fear, any sense of limitation, any sense of disease? It all is gone. It's irrelevant because it doesn't exist in this divine consciousness. So consciousness is that universal I, that universal presence. In our pursuit then of experiencing this oneness, we can bring into our mind those attributes, oneness. Now, the next attribute that I have that resonates with me about God is nowness. There is no time. God exists in the now. So if there is anything that comes into my experience of past and future, I realize that's not of God. That's coming to me from the world of material concepts. that have a beginning, a middle, and an end. So if I look at friends and I see that they're aging, that's the most gross surface. If I look past that surface and I go into soul, can the soul age? No, the soul is timeless. God is timeless. God is in the now. Joel says in this book, the time to start doing work about aging is when you're about 7 or 8 years old. So how many of you started doing that at 7 or 8 years old? By the time we start looking in the mirror and our hair has turned gray and we have a few wrinkles, it's too late. We've already accepted this appearance and it's going to just move on unless we can look through that appearance, even if that appearance is ourself in a mirror, and realize that's not me. Never has been me. It's been a concept of me. My identity is with I. Now, does I have a physical aspect to it? Could you draw a picture of I? I can draw a picture of all these concepts, but the concepts, the picture, the subject of my pictures are no more real than my picture. They're concepts. And I can, an artist, when they are, what are they really giving to their audience when they're making a picture is but their feeling, their consciousness, their experience of what it is they are dealing with. And if they know they're dealing with a concept, if they're a figure painter and they're presenting a figure, what is it about that figure that attracts a viewer to the painting? It's not the quality of the paint. It's not the features on the figure. It's what that intangible sense that the artist has captured that captures one's imagination. Why is the Mona Lisa one of the most famous paintings in the world? It's not the grandest portrait of anybody. Mona Lisa wasn't even that beautiful. But what was it? What what Da Vinci captured was an essence, a spirit. And that spirit is what we all capture when we are functioning in this world. Because we are all artists in that sense. As long as we are not attached to the object and we are able to perceive the soul, that spirit behind the appearance. When we look at this world, we are only seeing half of it. This revelation came to me last year. It was actually at the Waikiki class, and I haven't talked about it that much since that class. But if you go back to Scripture and go into Genesis, the beginning of creation, which is an allegory, which is a hymn, it's a poem, you realize that the whole of creation is spiritual, and its manifestation is spiritual. In the beginning is nothing. It's a void. Now this is what the scientists are talking about. There is nothing. Out of nothing, out of this void, God said, let there be light, and there was light. What is light? Light is energy. It's what the scientists are dealing with when they're trying to figure out what the universe is about. What not only the cosmos, but our own planet, our own individual being. What are we made of? What is it that moves us around this world? Energy. Where does that energy come from? It doesn't come from food. It doesn't come from our muscles. It comes from consciousness. That energy is that light that was established from nothing, that became the substance and the essence of life. It's energy. Now, from that energy, we find that we have the manifestation. We have the land and the seas. We have our own world being defined. But it is all an activity of energy. It's all an activity of light. And in the land and in the sea, there are all the elements necessary for life. And these are the first 3 days of creation, establishing everything that we would observe in this planet, in this world, in the heavens, as an activity of consciousness, an activity of light. And then we come to the fourth day, which is the turning point in ancient Middle Eastern poetry. The climax or the turning point was always in the middle of the poem, always in the middle of the presentation. And on the fourth day, we have the sun and moon set in the heavens, defining day and night. And what is that doing? That's measuring time. What is time? Time is just our codification of this cycle, this eternal cycle of night and day. And man, being kind of a obsessive type of creature, started counting. How many days? How many nights have we had? Oh, we have to start keeping track of this because the seasons change. It gets cold and then it gets hot. So how can we predict when that happens? You can see how this observation of material phenomena creates a sense of reality that is an apparent reality. It's the mirage reality. It's the reality that is defined through material observation. So when we look at creation, and we are only looking at the manifestation of creation, because after this time was introduced into this whole pattern of life, then we had the animals and everything appearing on earth, then we had man appearing, male and female, mankind, humankind, appearing in the image and likeness of God. So what does that mean? It means that individual being is God in manifestation, and it's spiritual. And then we have the rest, and the rest is the correlation to energy. You cannot have all of this manifestation without rest. And what is rest? Stillness. Silence. So it is in the rest, it is in this deep stillness and silence that we can experience the whole of creation from the beginning light, the energy that began it all, that manifests itself, to the manifestation of creation. So if we look at only the manifestation, the physical ocean, the mountains, the plants, the forests, the animals, human beings, and we say that's life, we're missing the greatest part of life. We're missing the greatest part of this whole, which is the spiritual substance behind it. When we become aware of that, we stop looking at life as individual being in terms of time. We do not have this sense of age. Some celebrity, who was it? Oh, Steven Tyler, you know, the rock and roll, says, I'm too young to be this old. We're all too young to be this old. Especially if you're a 70-year-old rocker. That is kind of, whoever thought that there would be 70-year-old rockers when, you know, 40 years ago. Our perception, we have dominion because we have been given this faculty, this soul faculty that allows us to perceive through the appearance world, to perceive the reality, the spiritual reality that's here and now. So, and this faculty is eternal. It's never born and it never dies. And though we go through stages of life in this experience, really, there is no stage of life. There is only infinite being, eternal in nature, manifesting itself as individual activity. And that individual activity is where we are. Now, when we start translating that individual activity into human life, we have stepped out of spiritual law and put ourselves under material law. And our whole education spiritually is to know spiritual law. And spiritual law can be defined in one experience. I am that I am. That defines spiritual law. When you know that I is infinite, that I is inseparable from all of creation, then you are experiencing spiritual law. I had this come to me the other day. Natural law is discovered through observation. Spiritual laws are manifested individually through experience. So we're never going to discover spiritual law through human observation, mental observation, reason. The only way we know spiritual law is through experience. Now, Joel defined God as an experience, not an entity or an identity, but an experience. And what is that experience? That experience is the realization that I is infinite, that I am that I am. That individual experience becomes then an activity of truth, an activity of the divine in this world. And what does that activity do? It reconciles. It brings into individual awareness the truth. And as Jesus said, if you know the truth will make you free. That truth is that there is only God, and that God exists not as a force, but as omnipotence. I'll go back to my principles. After nowness, we have completeness. That there is nothing to add to God. When we are under spiritual law, there is nothing that we realize, that there is nothing to get. That there is nothing that God is doing in this moment that it hasn't been doing eternally, forever. It is up to us. It is our responsibility as spiritual students to let this spiritual activity function through us so that we can experience the harmony and the wholeness and the completeness of God, of consciousness. So Joel says in the book, if we expect God to bring something to us, we are denying the omnipresence of God. We are saying, oh, this is an incomplete universe, that it isn't finished, that there is more that God has to create, and we want to be part of that creation. That's not what mysticism has given us through the ages. It is always that I am complete in my realization of the presence of God. And that completeness frees me from human desire. What locks us into this world are fear and desire. In the Buddhist tradition, the big lions that guard the temple, those fierce beasts, represent fear and desire. You walk past between fear and desire, you are going to walk into illumination. You are going to experience that spiritual nature of life that is beyond the pairs of opposites, that is one. When you do that, you discover omnipotence. And that is the turning point. That functions in mysticism as the keystone of spiritual realization. Omnipotence. There is no other power but God. It's not God is the most powerful, or my God is more powerful than your God, or my concept of God can outdo your concept of God. No, God is omnipotent. Elijah wanted to demonstrate this. Elijah thought that he could show human consciousness the omnipotence of God. And so he devised this great contest between the priests of Baal and their human concept of God, a material concept, a God made out of stone, and Elijah's concept of God, his misinterpretation of what he was experiencing within, that God was a power, that God was omnipotent. And so if God is omnipotent, then it is a power over something. And so each camp built their altar, and they prayed to God to come and show himself, show his power. And the priests of Baal, they prayed and prayed, and, you know, Elijah was a rather nasty little guy sometimes. I mean, he taunted these priests. He was so mean. He says, "What's wrong with your God? Is he asleep? Maybe you should ring your bells louder and wake him up." So, I mean, he was so sure that what he had experienced as omnipotence was something that could be translated into material power. And when the priests of Baal and their experiment failed and their God never came and consumed their offering, Elijah called on Jehovah, called on that concept of God, that Old Testament concept of God that was rewarding and punishing, to come down and consume the offering that Elijah had made for him. And it happened. Thunderbolts came out of the sky, and everybody ran. They thought, "Oh my God, this God is so powerful." But a strange thing happened. It wasn't satisfying. Elijah was there, and rather than unifying everybody and drawing everybody and saying, "Let's go to that God, that God's really powerful," it made him even more of an outcast, more of an outlaw. And so he retreated into a cave, into the mountains. And there he discovered the nature of God. God was not in the fire, in the earthquake, in the whirlwind, in the lightning. That God was in the still, small voice. You cannot take the still, small voice and use it as a battering ram to overcome material power, because it doesn't compute. It's like 2 + 2 = 5. It won't work. And the more that you have this idea that this omnipotent presence, which is within you, is going to do something in the material world, you're mimicking Elijah, and you're seeking God to do your bidding and come down and destroy the forces of evil. And there are no forces of evil in spirit. There is only omnipotence. So when we have problems and we are going to go into meditation and we have a problem that we want solved, if our mind is running in that, "Well, if I just hit that stillness, then God will solve this problem," we're still in the Old Testament. We haven't come out into the realization that there is not God and me, there is not God and life, there is only God. And when I'm in God, when I'm in this stillness of God, then there is nothing, no, there is nothing but God. There is then nothing but harmony, wholeness. The activity of our bodies are functioning in harmony. The activities of our family are functioning in harmony. The activities of our community are functioning in peace. and everybody is expressing that spiritual talent, that spiritual sense that they have. For some, they might be peacemakers. They might be working in the realm of law and justice and be attorneys, and yet they come into a situation, you know, that appears to be full of contention, that is all based on material sense of right and wrong, coming into that situation with a consciousness that there is only one power, and that is God. And in that experience of God, there is peace. They come into a situation, and suddenly the conflicting parties say, well, wait a minute, there's a better way to solve this. This is fair, this is equitable, and everybody ends up leaving the situation in peace. The Hawaiians had a name for this. They call it Ho'oponopono, where if there was conflict, everybody, all the aggrieved parties came together with a spiritual person, with a Hawaiian, a kahuna, or an elder, someone who was not involved in the conflict, but who could bring peace, who maintained the peace. And everyone sat, and however they sat, they all gathered, and nobody left until there was harmony, until there was resolution. And when that happened, then peace was restored without injury to anyone. That's a way that this activity of omnipotence can be applied in human life. Not the idea that there is power that is going to be used. Every aspect of living has its spiritual source. Omniscience. When we are in that stillness, the omniscience, the wisdom, divine wisdom, prevails. It brings into manifestation that which brings joy and fulfillment to the activity of this world. See, without the conscious realization of God, there is no God in this world. So our primary purpose in our spiritual work is to experience that level of consciousness so that no matter the appearance presenting itself to us, we have that peace. And whatever conflict comes into our experience, that peace is right there without having to do mental work, without having to say, wait a minute, I have to stop what I'm doing and bring God into the situation. Even that idea is not quite correct, because God is ever present. It is always on the scene. But you, as the individual, build a consciousness of truth. We actually build a consciousness of truth. Just as an attorney must go to law school and have a consciousness of law to be able to function in that system, we have to build a consciousness of truth to be able to be instruments of this divine one. And that consciousness of truth is built in the silence. It's built in the stillness, because that's where the experience is. And then we come and we apply it to everyday life. Someone in law school learns a law, then they go apply it in their everyday life. How does this law function in society? Well, we learn the principles of spirit. We experience them in this stillness. And then we bring them into our daily life and we apply it. And as we apply it, we find that our life begins to change. And as our life changes and we gain a degree of freedom, we find that we draw people to us because they're wondering, what are you doing? What is it that you have? And this is all an activity of love. That completes the circle. In my sense, this nature of God moves through these ideas, oneness, nowness, completeness, omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, and unconditioned love. That creates a circle. That creates a whole. And in that whole, we have every tool necessary. Those really are the definitions of spiritual law. Does it conform to oneness? Oh, if it's not in oneness, it's not spiritual. Is it in the now, or is it functioning in the future? Is it testifying that something needs to be added to our life? Is there a sense of power? That's the big one. Oh, we see so much power in this world. And our tendency is to deny it. Oh, that doesn't have power. If we deny a sense of material power without that consciousness, that conscious realization of God, we're just mouthing words. And then if we find that we have made all of these mental declarations, declared the truth, that is no power, and whatever seemed to have power continues, then it starts to rattle us. Well, wait a minute, what am I doing wrong? How come I'm not being free of this particular limitation? And you see where that takes our thinking? If you're asking, why am I not being free of this limitation? I've been praying, I've been meditating, I've been doing all this work, but it doesn't seem to be having any effect on my human experience. Where have you been putting all of your focus, your attention, into the human result, into the manifestation, into the desire to be free of a certain claim? Where, when you realize that none of that work is effective, the only effective work is the moment you see something that would deny spiritual law, is that you declare the truth. You know the truth. And what is knowing the truth? That knowing the truth isn't denying the error. Knowing the truth is coming back into these spiritual principles and realizing them, experiencing them. In that moment, you're free. In that moment, your loved ones are free. In that moment, your community is free. 10 righteous men can save a city, according to the Bible. And according to Joel, the last century, the 20th century, was a century without God. I don't even know if there were 2 righteous men. Because it takes that consciousness, living in the world, from spiritual realization to effect change in this world. And that's why we're all here. That's our purpose. Well, let's take a break, and we'll resume in about 15 minutes. Thank you.